In Britain, where he lives, he's been called a saint. And if that's not enough, he's also been knighted by the Queen and nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Not your usual accolades for a rock and roll singer. But then 34-year-old Bob Geldof is not your usual rock and roll singer. He's the one who raised over $100 million for the starving in Africa. And in his just published autobiography, he says he did it because it wasn't a job that could be left to politicians.
But I was at the UN and I saw Schultz and Shevardnadze spitting at each other like children across a sandpit. You're to blame. No, you're not. You are. You certainly are to blame. No, I'm not. You're to blame. You're the one. That was the level of political debate. These are the two greatest powers in the world spitting over these people who are dying on their knees, who've never had a political thought in their lives, who have no weapons, no food, no nothing. All I know is that everyone's suffering under it. I will get to those who are suffering and help them.
It wasn't enough to raise the money to buy the food. He had to get it to the starving people in the deserts of Ethiopia and the Sudan. He did it with a fleet of ships and trucks that he chartered to carry it.
We have 99 already in Sudan, and we have a further 10 to come.
And are these all from the Italians?
This one rock musician, with some help from his friends in the music world, raised more than $100 million to give food to the starving.
We were able to make issues of life and death an exciting thing to be part of. It was no longer the sort of abstract put a penny in the poor black boy's box. It was, there's your ships, there's your trucks, there's your tetracycline, here's the guy receiving it. That's your pound note that did that. Make no mistake ever about that. And 100% of that pound note went to him. And it was tangible, and therefore it was real. And the connection between you sitting at home in London, or New York, or Los Angeles, or Boise, Idaho, was made real. You could sit there, and there was a guy, and he was at the other end of this lifeline you'd created.
It's like wagon train. Wagon train, woo!
Geldof was hardly the most obvious candidate to organize a world campaign against famine. Born in Dublin, he dropped out of school and formed a group called the Boomtown Rats. After a couple of hits in Britain, their career went downhill. Life magazine said that even God must have hesitated when he knocked on Geldof's door. But Geldof says that's what Band-Aid was all about.
The whole point about Band-Aid, if it was nothing else, was that no matter what you are, or who you are, you're capable of doing something, that it's not enough to sit in front of the TV and say, that's terrible, there's nothing I can do about it. Now you can say, absolutely, that's terrible, and I can do something about it.
These pictures of the famine in Ethiopia, first shown on the BBC and then all around the world, were the ones that made Geldof feel he could no longer watch and do nothing. This was a feeding center in a refugee camp, surrounded by a low wall. Inside the wall, a few hundred who would get food. Outside, the many thousands who would not.
When I saw those people on the other side of that wall, this nurse had to pick, I think it was a couple hundred people who would be allowed to live out of several thousand, because that's all the food she had to give them. Some people held up their little children hoping that they'd be picked, and when they weren't picked, they just simply lowered them again. All I could see was our shame and their dignity. I can remember that vividly. I remember a child just laying its head down with exhaustion on the wall and watching these 300 being fed. That shouldn't happen.
It had a hell of an impact on you then.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Yeah. Geldof responded in the only way he knew. He wrote a song and persuaded most of the leading pop stars in Britain to record it together. Do They Know It's Christmas became the most successful single in the history of British pop music, and all of the money from it went to the famine. It also inspired a similar effort on this side of the Atlantic.
There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives.
We Are the World made $50 million for famine relief. Bob Geldof's Band-Aid had become a bandwagon, and more was to come.
It's 12 noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia, and around the world, it's time for Live Aid. Wembley welcomes their Royal Highnesses, the Prince and Princess of Wales.
Geldof organized the Live Aid concert with a few phone calls and a lot of goodwill. He made no written contracts with anyone, but somehow managed to convince the major television stations that he could deliver a show.
Listen, could you get Mel and Griff to give him a really heavy vibe? Get someone up there.
I was very frightened of it. Very frightened. I mean, if you can imagine that practically all of the major networks in the world were waiting for you to start your show and nothing happens. I mean, imagine failure on such a scale. There were so many hassles. I mean, the biggest thing was keeping the people who I put together to do it, like the two or three promoters, the TV people, and the politics between them, and having to constantly say, you can do it, it's not impossible.
As American and British rock stars performed on stage for 16 hours, Geldof worked himself to exhaustion behind the scenes to make sure the money kept coming in. With Band Aid and Live Aid together, raising over $100 million was not as hard as it might seem. Spending the $100 million was. In Africa, Geldof soon found out what established agencies already knew, that getting food to those who needed it was a nightmare. Through government corruption or red tape, food that had been shipped often never got out of the ports. While a few miles away, people like this old woman who'd walked hundreds of miles in search of food died of hunger. No wonder the aid agencies resented Band-Aid's arrival on the scene and dismissed them as a bunch of amateurs.
We were a bunch of amateurs, and that was our great strength. My argument was, if all the sophistication in the world has got us to this point, then I'll stand up for naivety.
Geldof ran Band-Aid from these modest offices in London, which were staffed with voluntary help. He also set up a Band-Aid trust with lawyers, accountants, and record producers. The sharp business minds of the record industry were applied to the business of aid.
Like, you'd have record company accountants looking at something saying, that can't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And me getting on the phone saying, how much does it cost for a trip to Port Sudan? They say, £500,000. You must be joking. We'll have no money left. Mm-hmm. And getting on TV and saying, listen, the £500,000, that can't be right. There must be a shipper out there who can come up with a plan. There were 12 shippers on the line. And TV let me do that. They let me use any program as a bulletin board.
With the immediate emergency over, Band-Aid still has money left to spend, and it's putting it into long-term development projects in Africa. When Geldof himself goes there, he's treated like a hero.
It bores me and embarrasses me. I was not brought up to inspect guards of honor, nor do I know how to deal with it. For me, it's a complete waste of my time to watch all these people dancing and that, which I have absolutely no interest in whatever.
And all the dancing and leaping breaks out, and, yeah, I hate it.
You plant a tree and...
Yeah, plant a tree in Geldof Park, somewhere in Africa, and things like that.
You get a medal?
Yeah, I get a medal, yeah. Get medals coming out of my ear holes.
Geldof has said that he will shake hands with the devil on his left and the devil on his right to get to those in need. But that doesn't stop him giving these African leaders a hard time. In Ethiopia, he saw the mass deportation of refugees in Soviet transport planes and tackled a minister of the Marxist government about it.
To the West, the immediate psychological reaction is Jews being led at gunpoint into cattle trucks by the Nazis. That's the first thing. It's just you keep shooting yourself in the foot.
The one luxury you have in this is the absolute moral certainty that what you're doing, if it stops people suffering, must be right. And so it's permissible to talk to political thugs. It's permissible to get what you can out of hostile governments.
It's not just hostile governments that receive the Geldof treatment. President Mitterrand of France was persuaded to part with $3 million. But just how does a rock and roller negotiate with politicians?
A device that's useful is to go into some major country, not unlike your own, for example, and say to someone who's a heavyweight politician and they're surrounded by their aides who say nothing but make notes and whisper, which is very disturbing, because you're there in your jeans and that by yourself, feeling that, you know, God, here's all these powerful people. And so I busk it, you know. I say, well, of course, you know, you're spent X billion on so-and-so. And they say, yes, I know that, but... And I've just made a figure up out of my head. And they say, yes, I know. So I know we're all tap dancing, which is very reassuring, you know.
Geldof had Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher tap dancing when he asked her why Europe didn't send its surplus butter supplies to Ethiopia. That butter could provide much-needed butter oil for the starving.
I mean, at the moment, you've got a problem with the butter mountain. You don't know how to dispose of it. To sell to the Russians is the cheapest way.
I'm sorry, but butter doesn't do very much good in Africa, as you know.
Well, butter oil actually does. It is one of the major supplementary foods.
Butter oil, if you can get it.
Well, it is a byproduct of butter. Yes.
Well, look, I said to her, doesn't she think it's a bit ridiculous? And she said, Mr. Geldof. You know, like, and she started doing this stuff to me, you know, and she was saying it's not as simple as that. You know, people there, she said people in Africa can't eat butter, and they can eat butter oil, which is a byproduct of butter. In fact, it's one of the few things they can absorb to keep them alive. And she said it's not as simple as that, and I ended by saying, no, nothing's as simple as dying.
She looked like she wanted to get away from you.
She looked like she wanted to kill me.
And the British love him for it, this outspoken Irishman who tells it like it is. They've showered him with honorary degrees, and last summer, the Queen gave him a knighthood. Certainly the first and probably the last time Sir Bob made an effort with his appearance.
She said it was a small token for what you've done. It must have been very hard work. And I said, not as hard as getting into this thing. And she said, yes, I can see that. So,
Paula Yates, Geldof's longtime girlfriend, now his wife, has watched it all.
I was never surprised by anything he did. So... You know, everyone says to me, were you surprised by what he did? And I wasn't at all. It was exactly the kind of thing I would have expected him to do. But that's because I love him, so I would think those things. I would think that he would do something massive, whereas other people probably thought of him as just the person that they just saw around. But I do think it's a bit odd sometimes when he gets awards and things and they make speeches, and I think...
They don't know.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't know what a bad boy he is.
You've admitted to experimenting, doing more than experimenting with drugs. Mm. Easy sex from groupies. Mm. That's not the life of a saint.
I feel a bit like Saint Augustine. Give me chastity, but not yet.
Today, Bob Geldof says he's broke. He's worked without pay, refusing to take a cent from the Band-Aid proceeds. This rebel with a cause is also rebelling against becoming an institution. So he's gone back to being a pop singer, a career about which he has few illusions.
There are a lot of people who take pop music very seriously.
Ridiculous.
You don't?
No. I don't at all. I think, as I say, actually there it should be treated with the disrespect it deserves. Now, I take it seriously because it's what I do. I get a great sense of satisfaction and achievement out of writing a good pop song, whereas I don't get it out of anything to do with Band-Aid. And some people might consider that immensely trite. That's too bad. For some reason, it satisfies something in my soul. And at the same time, as I said, in terms of things that are critical or important on the world, it is pretty unimportant thing. Who's gonna pick
you up? Unimportant or not, Bob Geldof made pop music succeed where governments and aid agencies had failed. At the Live Aid concert, he showed these pictures of dying children edited to pop music and stirred the conscience of the world.
We marketed famine, like you would do a hit record, which sounds like very unfeeling, but that was the only way I knew how. And that's how we were able to bring aid to the top of the political agenda.
You've been accused of making famine a fashionable cause, of glamorizing tragedy.
Mm.
For good purposes, but...
Mm. So what? How many people are alive?